Hey, this is Tom Waddle. Thanks for listening to the Waddle and Sylvie podcast brought to you by Miller Lite, the presenting sponsor of the 2020 ESPN 1000 Virtual Fantasy Football Championship.
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Follow at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87 on Twitter.
As I was saying, it's time for the nuttiest story of the day, brought to you by Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. A night with Screwball
is bound to get a little nutty.
Let's go to the state of Washington. What do you say? Is it pronounced the city Yakima? Yakima? Yeah. A man is under arrest and facing a dozen serious drug and identity theft charges after what began with a bicycle missing a light. Police say Saturday evening, an officer noticed a man riding a bike south on 10th Avenue in Yakima without a light on his bicycle. The officer saying he decided to stop the man to talk to him about the importance of having a light on your bicycle on a dark road at night. After the officer turned on his emergency lights, he says the man didn't pull over and instead tried to get away, making multiple turns and pedaling the bike extremely fast. So got to a certain area. Police say the man ditched the bike, threw the backpack he had on the ground, and began running down a driveway. Police say the man tripped while trying to jump a 3-foot fence, and the officer yelled he'd use his taser on him if he didn't stop running. At that point, the officer says the man put his hands up, exclaiming, "I just need to poop."
Another one. This is the second one this week.
38-year-old Samuel Rojas was arrested. In searching Rojas and the bag he had with him that he tossed away, police say they found 3 different cell phones, brass knuckles, a pill cutter, $240 in counterfeit currency marked prop only, well over 100 blue oxycodone pills laced with fentanyl, 9 suboxone strips, 2 pipes, a scale, numerous knives, and some suspicious checks.
And he had to poop.
And he had to poop. Like, this guy would have won. You could, let's make a deal with Monty Hall.
Right.
Like, okay, sir, I'll give you $30 for any type of counterfeit currency. Here you go, Monty. Here's $240 counterfeit currency.
I'll give you $100 for some brass knuckles.
Here you go, Monty.
I got that, too.
And $200 for, let's say, over 100 blue oxycodone pills. Boom. I gotcha. Wow.
That's awesome. Are we going to do Florida or Ohio as well, boys?
I think we should.
I mean, if you want to.
Get ready to play the game that's sweeping the nation. Public drunkenness. Exotic animals. Dumb criminals. Random stabbings. Or maybe just some good old-fashioned debauchery. Everything's on the table. It's the Sunshine State versus the Buckeye State as we play Florida or Ohio. And as always, listeners, feel free to play along at home.
This is going to gross some people out, but I swear by it. If you've never had it before, peanut butter and dill pickle. Trust me.
Yeah, I'm not
into life.
Whoa.
Trust me.
I leave dill pickles by themselves. I do not mess with their greatness.
It's a long time young family tradition. That's my mom's side of the family.
Yeah.
And it was passed down to me, and I would pass it down to my children and my children's children.
All right,
I got a weird question. Okay, go ahead. What is it?
Do you take the whole pickle and smear peanut butter?
No. You make a sandwich.
Cut up the pickle?
You make a sandwich and you either use like the cut up like rounds that they have for like cheeseburgers.
Not the spear.
You can use the spear if you want to take. If you want to get weird, if you got like an extra hot dog bun or something, you can use the spear. But usually you use the dill circles. The dill, whatever they're called, like they're like quarter size.
Do they call them chips?
Yeah.
You're right.
Black. Trust me. I'm not.
I love the dill chips.
Yeah, trust me. It's delicious and maybe nutritious. I don't know. I'm not an armchair nutritionist. I don't know.
There's nothing keto there, right?
I don't know. Naked man arrested for harassing hotel guests. A hotel manager called police regarding an unruly guest at a hotel. The arriving officer located the man, who was not only drunk, but was naked from the waist down. You know, no shirt, no shoes, no service. The man.
No, he had a shirt on, it sounds like.
Yeah, he was ready for the service.
That's what I'm saying.
No pants, no shorts, no shoes, no socks, no service.
The sign says no shirt, no shoes, no service. So if you walk in pantsless, what if I have
a shirt on, though? I can get a service. I get a burger and a beer.
You get a burger
Whoa,
and a beer.
I'm not serving you. You don't have any pants on. It says no shirt, no shoes, no pants, no service.
Read the shirt.
I got a shirt on.
Depends what kind of service you want, though.
Okay, then.
The man had been harassing guests, and he was arrested for disorderly conduct while being intoxicated. I ask you, was the pantsless man at a hotel in Florida or Ohio?
I'm going to go Akron.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, I'm not going Florida.
This, to me, whenever I get this nudity late at night drunk in one of these fancy boutique hotels, I'm picturing a boutique hotel, I think of South Beach. Now,
okay,
last time
fair.
We had Monday was a Miami answer, so I'm going to say he's double-dipped South Beach and going Miami again.
That's good. That's good deduction there. But
double dip with the service. I'm going to go Toledo, Ohio.
Deduced. A nearly naked man was arrested for harassing hotel guests and being intoxicated in Brooklyn, Ohio.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's how we do it.
Brooklyn, Ohio.
We take our pants down and we walk around hotels.
And then drunk.
Hey, can I give you a quick update on an injury report?
Please, yes.
This is a courtesy of our friend Vaughn McClure, who now covers the Atlanta Falcons. Full Falcons injury report with Julio Jones has a hamstring. Two main pass rushers, two starting tackles, two safeties, all not practicing today.
You get him at the right time.
Yes. It's going to be one of those magical seasons.
And it's one thing so far, knock on wood, the Bears have is their health.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. Like, do we have magic? Do we have the wind at our backs?
Well,
see, you said this a bunch of times last year, too. Last year, there was like this. Oh, they're getting lucky. They're missing this. They're doing this. And then 8-8, and they missed the playoffs.
Well, that was on them. Waddle was right.
Yeah.
I mean,
last year, you got David Blough and Jeff Driscoll.
Yes. He was right there, Abdallah. I mean, they did get lucky to be 8-8, if you think about it.
You got no Julio Jones, your two main pass rushers, your two starting tackles, and two safeties. Nobody's practicing. He's getting fired. Bears are going to come in there, roll their ass.
Dan Quinn?
Yeah.
Boy, to miss out on Julio Jones when they've been scoring all those points, if that would be the case. I got to unmute Vaughn McClure this week because I love Vaughn. I've told you this before.
What?
I've told you this, Abdallah, before. He tweets so much Falcon stuff. I can't
That's
take.
That's his job.
I know that. I don't blame him. That's why he's muted.
This is bad guy alert. Sylvie's bad guy.
I don't need all the Falcons knowledge except this week.
That's his
and I can't unfollow him.
I love that. I muted Sylvie because of all the Cubs stuff and show promotion.
Look, half the famous people, maybe more, have muted me. There's no doubt about that. At 9:30 at night, I'm tweeting stupid stuff about the Cubs.
Wait, dude. So you that's very, very presumptuous that you think a lot of famous people are following
you. No, the ones who are.
Oh, okay.
Which famous people are following
like,
you?
Did Brad Pitt put you on blast?
Like, Louis Riddick follows me, Urlacher, whoever you, whatever you deem. I'm not talking about A-list celebrities. I'm talking about people in the sports world,
sports celebrities that I have been muted long time ago.
Is not following you, right?
No.
You don't know that. No.
Well, that'd be cool if Jen was.
You're not getting a Steve Carell. Steve Carell's not hitting the mute button.
No,
I told you
no.
I went to college with his wife, Nancy Walls. We were in the same economics class.
She's very funny.
Ike Barinholtz follows me.
Who?
Ike Barinholtz. There's no way that Ike Barinholtz doesn't have me muted.
Who's the most famous guy or woman, the most famous person that follows you?
Tom Waddle?
Yeah, I was going to say.
You know what?
Tommy Boy 87.
Why don't you just stick it?
We're answering the question.
That's not true.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
The person with the most followers, it's easy. It's hands down. You won't even think of it, but it's easy. It's easy.
Oh, Barstool Big Cat.
Absolutely.
Yes.
It's Big Cat.
Yes.
It's Big Cat. Yeah.
He's got over 1 million followers.
Yeah. It's
You're
Big
right
Cat.
About that. That's mm-hmm. a good call by you. Really good. All right. So Matt Nagy spoke today. I have not heard this yet. I wanted to hear this on the show because Abdallah sold it to me in a certain way. And he was, the question is included in this, correct, Black?
No, the question for Matt Nagy was, have you seen enough improvement from Mitchell Trubisky, or are you still looking for more?
Yeah, I would say, Jason, that right now we definitely see enough improvement. I think that he knows that there's plenty more that can happen. There's a couple reads that he had in that game that, you know, was number one in the progression, and he didn't get to. And he knows that. We talked about it as an offense, and those are the ones that we want to eliminate because they can turn into big plays. But there's been a lot of growth with him as well in regards to his decision-making. You know, we talked last year, it was a big deal. Like, let's not make a bad play worse, number one, and let's keep that next play mentality going, where if something bad happens on one play, let's make a good play the next. He's been doing that. We haven't had that domino effect. That, to me, is, again, another sign of growth for him.
And here's the sign of growth also extends to the coach, because I believe the coach has had a really good start to the season. Hasn't been perfect. Like I said, I was not a fan of them throwing it on 3rd-and-1 and 4th-and-1 on their final try. But for the most part, what has the coach done? I mean, it's easy to see. The coach has done a much better job designing a game plan that fits his quarterback's strengths. He's sticking to a commitment to running the football. He's running Mitch from under center. They're working a lot of stuff off of run action. They're allowing Mitch to get to the edge on some things. They're not asking him to stand back there in the shotgun and read everything like Dan Marino, which was a mistake last year.
But the what Abdallah told me is exactly right, the way he phrased it. The question was, has he seen enough growth? And I know after the first 2 or 3 seconds, he said, we can always see more. But he said, yes, we've seen enough growth. Now, my question is, what does that mean? Does that mean we've seen enough growth for him to keep his job the rest of the year?
I don't think.
What does that mean?
Listen, I don't think that you trade for a guy and you commit $21 million and you give up a 4th-round pick to bring in somebody and only have him there in case break glass. I think that there will still be a scenario where, if for whatever reason Mitch doesn't progress, especially when you start to face some better teams, where they will still entertain the thought of making a switch.
They may entertain it, but I don't know if they'll make it.
Because
I don't think they make that switch until we get to a point where we're in dire need of a quarterback.
Well, I'm
switch.
Just saying, I don't think it's off the table. Like Sylvie is saying now, you know, does that mean? What does that mean? You've seen enough improvement for what? That he's never coming off the field at all this year? That I don't agree. I think they're, listen, I put on the film and I see some things that he does better. Again, they're not asking him to do, I don't think, a lot of what they did last year. But he looks better in a lot of situations. He still makes some of the same mistakes when he starts to panic and his mechanics break down and some things. But
all right. So it's worth playing later and talking more about the Bears, and we'll get into it. Coming up next, we have a special guest. This guy is an Emmy Award winner, and this guy is being credited for turning around the Bulls offseason. We will talk to this special guest next.
Coming up next,
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
When we were watching the Emmys on Sunday, I was rooting for two things as we watched. And one of them was that Schitt's Creek would finally get the rewards it deserved, and it did. And
Mike always gets nervous when you say that. I'd love to see the look on his face whenever you say that.
It's the name of the show.
I know. I'm with
you. And of course, we were rooting for Jason Hare to win Best Documentary.
I think he was the most
Last Dance.
He's the most deserving person in the entire show.
Yes, and we wanted to bring him on. He is the director, an award-winning director at that, for The Last Dance. We talked to him after every episode of The Last Dance aired on ESPN. So we wanted A, to congratulate him, and B, to thank him, because we believe that when the entire basketball world watched The Last Dance, that the perception of the Bulls may have changed, where people wanted to come work here again because they saw that greatness could be achieved. So, Jason, congratulations and thank you.
Thank you for having me on, guys. This feels like, this is like full circle, like the beginning of the project I talked to you, and now this is one of the last interviews that we'll do. The thing is done and wrapped. It's kind of like, I feel like I'm in the yellow, you're wearing the yellow shirt down the Champs-Élysées in the Tour de France.
Jason, how gratifying is it to walk away with this award? I assume that every time you put a project in motion, you're obviously trying to make the best project possible, but that is not always going to end in an Emmy. This one does.
It's hugely gratifying, mostly, for the team that we put together. We were like a family. We've become like a family over these last 2.5 years. And the partners, with the NBA, we worked really closely with, and ESPN and Netflix and Michael's team. So we had a lot of people. It was a very big group text that we were on. Saturday night is when they actually announced our category, because the Emmys weren't for like a week this year. So it just feels really gratifying to know that we all came together, everyone contributed, because you guys know that so many times too many cooks spoil the broth. And this was a case where we had a lot of people battling, a lot of differing opinions and a lot of knockdown dragouts creatively over the last few years. But ultimately, everyone was proud of what we did, and then it was really gratifying to see the voters agreed.
Jason Hare joining us, the award-winning director of The Last Dance. I brought this up, and I'm not really joking about this. People have mentioned this. Mark Eversley, who's now the Bulls GM under AK, mentioned this. And I know you're a Boston guy, but do you believe that you putting the spotlight on the greatness of the Bulls, of what happened in the 90s, allowed others to see that currently, modern day, they can win again here in Chicago?
I mean, maybe. I saw the story about the new coach yesterday and all that, so that's the first time it occurred to me that people look at the Bulls a little bit differently. But that uniform and those colors and that logo, it is so iconic, and it's iconic because of the work that those guys who won all those titles back in the 90s put in. And, you know, the Doug Collinses and the people who actually built the bedrock of those titles in the late 80s put in, and those are the teams that we spotlighted. So it didn't occur to me until I read a couple of articles and a couple of tweets yesterday, but if it did contribute, then it's just one more thing to be proud of, because I feel like that fan base of between doing the Bears project and the Bulls project, I've really come to love Chicago, and I feel like it has so much in common with Boston, where I'm from, that I really root for you guys. So if it did help rebuild that organization in some fraction of a way, then I'm really proud of that and really excited to actually come back out there and go to a game.
Did you have any connection to Michael Jordan afterwards? Have you guys talked about this wonderful achievement?
No. I know he's aware of it. I've spoken to his manager and a couple of people in his camp. Michael's kind of on a different, he's on a different stratosphere, I think. He's probably out golfing at some Illuminati golf course right now. Who knows? But I know that he's aware of it. I did communicate with his kids a little bit over text. I know that he's proud of it. The family's proud. Everyone is really happy with the turnout of the project and how he was portrayed. I heard a podcast yesterday with Mike Greenberg and Ahmad Rashad that made me really happy, because Greenberg asked Ahmad, how close is that to the real Michael? And Ahmad said, that's it. That's what you see is what you get. That's 100% what Michael Jordan is. And that's exactly what our goal was the entire time, was to actually convey to people what the true personality was and what it's like to hang out with this guy and talk to him.
Jason, as we let you go, can you tell us at all what's next for you?
I wish that I could. It's not that it's a secret. It's that I'm just kind of weighing some options right now. I think it probably will be outside of the sports documentary realm, whether it's a documentary about something different than sports, so like maybe true crime or maybe music. And I'm also looking at a bunch of scripted projects for like a narrative, more traditional, you know, a real movie, as my niece would call it.
And you will lay back, sit back, and have a couple of Jamesons to celebrate, please, right?
We already did that. Saturday okay. night we did that. But now that you mention it, I'll try and do some more.
Oh, perfect. Tonight. Perfect.
Well, we wanted to have you on again. You were so good to us, and you produced and directed such great content. Everyone here in Chicago appreciates you, appreciates the project, and, of course, appreciates those great Bulls teams. So congratulations, Jason, and thank you for joining
yes.
us.
Congrats, Jason.
Thanks for having me, guys. Can't wait to talk to you again. Hopefully in person, once this thing lets up,
yes.
we can have a beer or a Jameson in person.
Perfect.
Let's do that. There you go.
Thanks,
we
Jason.
Wanted to have him on.
Yes.
It's a really busy day, but Jason Hare in The Last Dance, and it continues to trend on Netflix, even though it already aired on ESPN. If you haven't seen any or you want to, like, watch them again, you can do that on Netflix.
Think about how generous he was with his time with us. Like, we're in the middle of, like, there's nothing going on pandemic. They decide to move this documentary forward so that there is something sports-related for us to all consume. And he would spend every Monday after every Sunday episode breaking it down for us and previewing the next one. Like, he provided us such great insight and content in a moment where there was a dearth of it, no question about it.
Oh, I mean, I think about how important that was to all of us.
We were clinging
you guys,
to that.
I got Dennis Rodman's trainer online.
Right.
So you want me to jump
yes.
in there to get it real quick?
Carmen Electra.
A guy that may or may not have delivered a pizza.
Right. I mean, we've talked about it. Those were, like, I never felt like we were ever really, truly struggling to talk about anything.
Right.
But those were the lean moments of this pandemic experience, were they not?
And then he'd hang up and he's like, guys, I gotta go. I gotta edit episodes 7 and 8.
Yeah.
You know, like, they were still working. So you're right about how we wanted to make sure, because after the weekend, to let everyone know that they did win the Emmy. Jason's so good at what he does. And he gave us such an insider's view of those episodes. And there, of course, anything that you want to go back to on the Waddle and Sylvie Show, all that stuff is on demand. Just download the ESPN Chicago app. But that's the biggest thing that happened yesterday, Waddle. To anybody who, like, says to me, Sylvie, it's a players league and the Bulls aren't back yet, and Billy Donovan, no big deal. And the one thing that this quote off season for the Bulls, and the NBA is not off yet, they're in the playoffs still, but the one thing that this last couple of months has given Bulls fans, which is the biggest thing, is hope.
Yeah.
And I don't know in 5 years if we're going to look back on this and say this was awesome. There's still a lot to be determined, and we're going to ride this together and find out. But the one thing that hiring AK and Mark Eversley and the Bulls ownership finally decided to let go of Gar and Pax, and they allowed AK to hire a big money coach, is they've given Bulls fans hope,
mm-hmm.
something that a lot of us have lost throughout the years. And that is so important as a sports fan.
Amen. And by the way, our NBA coverage brought to you by Kia. Visit Kia.com to see what it means to give it everything. And by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
All right. So Michael Wilbon will talk about the hiring of Billy Donovan. And more importantly, we lost one of the all-time greats in not only Chicago sports, but NFL history. And it's one of Michael Wilbon's heroes in sports. We'll talk to Michael about that coming up next.
It can be sad when you miss your favorite interview. Don't despair. Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app. It's Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000.
Let's talk to Michael Wilbon a little earlier than normal. And we lost one of the all-time greats today. Gale Sayers passed away at the age of 77. Not just one of the all-time Chicago sports greats.
One of the
truly
the,
a legend,
yeah, the games,
nationally.
One of the game's greatest. Mike is, by the way, brought to you by HawkAuto.com. Ford, Chevy, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, Subaru, Cadillac, Mazda, and VW. All in one place. HawkAuto.com, where Chicagoland saves big.
Oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Guess what today is?
It's Wilbon Day.
Chicago native Michael Wilbon, host of Pardon the Interruption with Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN Chicago.
Michael, thanks for joining us and getting to know you well throughout the years, not only on the air and off the air. There are a few former sports greats that I know when you ask, when someone asks, hey, who did Michael Wilbon love growing up? And whenever I would tell people that, Gale Sayers is always atop the list. Am I accurate?
Yeah, you are. That's why today has been just a downer. And it's not a surprise. I mean, we've known this was coming. I mean, I know that you and Tommy and I have talked about knowing this, and Mrs. Sayers, you know, and her husband under her great care, you know, has been, you know, sort of telling people, hey, it's been a tough time for her husband. It's been a tough time with health and struggling with this. And so, you know, but just because something is not a surprise doesn't mean it doesn't hit you. And this hits hard. For me personally, the first heroes I had were Ernie Banks, Gale Sayers, Dick Butkus, Bobby Hull. I mean, that's that group. And, I'm very lucky. I got to know all of my heroes. I got to meet them and maybe know Gale a little better than most of the others because I hosted an event for him. His event is charity event. And I've walked into Soldier Field with him on Sunday a couple of times. It was like, oh, my God. You know, I'm walking in with Gale Sayers. I'm walking into Soldier Field. And he and Artie. And it's just, you know, you start to just, you start to take stock of your own mortality when you lose your childhood heroes. We lost, you know, Walter, obviously, a long time ago. I mean, it's been, 21 years since we lost Walter Payton. And Gale looked so good. He looked and sounded so good just a few years ago. He really did. And I know this illness that he had just takes you, you're not yourself. But just before that, man, I would see him at, like, the movie theaters in the neighborhood. I'd see him, you know, at Soldier Field, at the airport. And it was just great to just, you know. And Matthew was too young to appreciate it now. You know, last week when Saquon Barkley got hurt on Sunday, he said, you know, Dad, do you think Saquon Barkley can come back? I'm like, yeah. You ain't cool, he'll come back. And I was wearing a Gale Sayers jersey watching the games, as I often do. I mean, the jerseys I wear most often are 40 or 34. And he said, well, Gale Sayers couldn't come back. And I said, no, dude, it was a different time. It was a different time. He came back from the first knee injury and still led the league in rushing, which was impossible. And then I think when the left knee was injured, that just sort of did him in. But, you know, seeing Saquon Barkley go out like that on Sunday in Chicago, it was a certain irony to it that was foreshadowing, as it turns out.
Mike, he was one of the greatest, despite the brevity of his career. Getting to know him over the course of time, I know that, you know, he was, I don't know if the right word, and you can describe it better than I, but the frustration that the injury robbed him of being a guy that could have done what he did for 10, 12, 14 years. Over the course of time, did he become more at peace with, hey, that's just the way things happened?
Yeah, I thought so, but I didn't know him at the end of his career. I didn't know. I was 12 years old when his career ended, and I did not, in the times I was around, detect any bitterness or any of that. Like I said, he came to the games, and he would walk in, and, you know, I mean, people had to be a certain age to know who Gale was just to look at him. Because, first of all, he didn't look any older. You've seen these clips today. I have a photo up on my Instagram account of me with Gale Sayers 10 years ago. He was 67. He looked like he was 47.
Yeah, prior to him getting sick, he looked like a young man at all times.
I said to him a couple of times, I swear, you look like you could, you know, go out there and take snaps. And he would just sort of smile and pat me on the shoulder. And, he did. He was a young man. He was a man. Gale Sayers was a man. You know, that's one thing that he and Jim Brown, and I've been around Jim Brown actually more times probably over the years than Gale. They were men, and they played the game when it was just so hard. And remember the numbers that we're talking about Jim Brown and Gale Sayers putting up. Jim Brown did some of those in 12 games. Mm-hmm. Gale did all of them in 14. He didn't have any 16-game seasons. Walter didn't start with 16-game seasons. Walter Payton started with 14-game seasons, at least the first couple. So it's just people need to go to YouTube. They need to go wherever they need to go for their videos. Just, you know, all these kids that have access to video, I don't want to hear, well, he played a long time ago. So what? Don't be lazy. Get on your computer and look at Gale Sayers.
I was going to ask you if you could tell somebody who hasn't done that yet, or if you were describing Gale and comparing him to a more modern runner, would it be Barry Sanders, or was there no comparison?
There was no comparison because he was big. I mean, he's, you know, well, I should say Barry was not a lightweight in terms of weight.
I just kind of mean the style where they could
but guys, size, you know, of course, helps determine. Like O.J. Simpson, what made O.J. was so different at the time was that O.J. was 6'3.5",
right,
220 pounds, and back, he just went, oh, my God, he's huge when you saw him in person. Gale wasn't that big, but to me, it was like there were elements of O.J., and there were elements of Barry Sanders, and I think of those two guys. I really do. I think of because he could shift. He didn't have to cut hard to shake you. Yes, he had those hard cuts, but he also had speed. I mean, remember he was all state, maybe even all American in track and field at Kansas. I think he was a long jump champion, NCAA long jump champion, if I'm not mistaken. Certainly, he was that in high school. So, I mean, we're talking about a singularly great athlete who then, I mean, remember, when he, I got to look this up, and maybe you guys can help with this because I don't want to, like, mislead anybody, but my memory says to me that after Gale was injured in 1968, he came back in 69. He led the league in rushing, by the way, when he came back from that knee injury. My memory is saying to me that George Halas put him out there, and I guess George was still the coach in 69. You have to look that up. I don't think it was like Abe Gibron or anything yet, was it? No, it couldn't have been. So in my mind, he put Gale Sayers on kick return in the first preseason game. In preseason. And Gale went either 99 or 100 yards for a touchdown, in my head. Now, I was 10 years old, so maybe I'm not remembering it as accurately. But I got to go look that up. But he, you know, I mean, I have to tell you, I know that you've been around enough players from that era that it's not just about them bragging about how tough they are. You knew how tough they were. You knew how tough they were. It was like, I mean, you know, one of the sad, and part of it's sad, because I know that there was talk about Gale going back into games having suffered a head injury, which you could not go back into a game with now. It was a wild, wild west when Gale Sayers played and when Dick Butkus played and when Mike Ditka played. And you look at guys and the way they walk and the hips and knees and things that have happened to them. Gale didn't have that, even though he had those. Each knee had a surgery, a serious one. There was no scope. And the way he walked upright, the way he stood, it was just remarkable that he was like that into his 70s.
Yeah.
It's Steve Sable, the late, great Steve Sable from NFL Films, I read this morning, Michael, comped him back in the day to Dr. J and Fred Astaire.
Jeez, okay, like, okay, seriously. And, you know, Steve Sable was my go-to for 10 years covering the NFL when I wanted to ask him about a player and a description. That's beautiful. Because it was the whole thing about poetry in motion. And you see that clip of Gale today saying, just give me, all I needed was 18 inches of daylight. 18 inches, I don't even think you needed that. You know, and so some of those runs you saw at Wrigley Field. How about this? Which is only Bears fans who have a certain age would care about this. So Gale Sayers never played at Soldier Field, and Walter Payton never played at Wrigley Field.
Yeah, I said earlier, yeah, Mike, I think you can make a great argument that the greatest performance in the history of Wrigley Field wasn't a baseball player. It was Gale playing against the 49ers in that six-touchdown game.
There are people who make that, who say that. And, I remember the six-touchdown game kind of vaguely. I remember there was either a punt or a kick return. How about this? He only had something like 8 carries from scrimmage that day, and he scored on 4 of them? Come on.
Yeah.
It's insane. And there's another stat that he had, that his 128 yards from his 128 yards of all-purpose yardage per game are still the NFL record.
Michael, I gave that earlier. 9 carries, 113 yards, 4 touchdowns. 2 catches.
Nine carries, okay.
Listen to this. 2 carries, 2 catches, I'm sorry, 89 yards and a touchdown. 5 kick returns, 134 yards and a touchdown. December 12th, 1965.
His punt return average, no one comes close to it today. No one comes close to 14.1. Those kick return guys lead the league with 11 and 12 yards a carry. Man, okay, Deion has been not only close to it, he's probably been beyond it. But punt returns, kick returns, the lead back. And, you know, I was interested in when Kermit Alexander, and I remember being a kid when Alexander put his helmet on Gale's knee. And again, a game against the 49ers, and they carried Gale off. George Halas cried. He wept. And he was coaching the team then. He wasn't just owning it. And it just I remember thinking I just was cheated as a kid. I was 10 years old that fall. Maybe I turned 11. It was late in the season maybe. And I remember being just feeling cheated that Gale Sayers, just as I was getting old enough to really appreciate this, he was gone. And, he came back, obviously, but he was still – you know, he wasn't the same player he was in 1966, 67, 68. And, you know, getting Walter Payton a few years later was like the great mulligan from God. And they weren't the same. They didn't go about it the same way. But I remember thinking, Gale and Walter's second year, oh, my God, this could be like we could be getting a second shot at this. To see the great player. You know, and people can think about, you know, people now who are 25, 30 years old, they did running back. Well, why was that so great? Because that was the best thing you could be. God knows in the Chicago Bears uniform, it wasn't the quarterback. It was the running back. You know, I have been gifted the number 28 jersey from a running back. It was Willie Gallimore. I have that jersey in my collection of Bears jerseys. And those are the jerseys I wear, 28, 40, or 34, mostly. I have some others, 51. I have an actual jersey, which is made of the real material that the Bears wore, not the replicas that are sold now. But I'll just tell you this quick story. I'm sorry for rambling. I think I said on with you guys in the studio, I used to butt dial Dick Butkus, obviously, accidentally. And I was so terrified when Dick would say, you know, is that your kid dialing me? I'm like, no, Mr. Butkus, that's me, the 45-year-old grown man dialing you. I'm sorry. So Dick would laugh at this. Thank God, because I mean, you know, Dick, Tommy, is Dick not terrifying?
Oh my God, even to now? This day, yeah, it scares the hell out of me.
He scares the hell out of me. Except he would laugh maniacally. Even that scared me. So we talking one night. I called Dick Butkus. Luckily, he's on West Coast time. He's in L.A., so it wasn't too late. So we start talking about stuff and earliest memories, and I just said, thank you. I can't thank you enough. And I said, you and Gale, more than anybody else, you guys are my idols. And Butkus, there was a silence, and he said, Gale was more worthy of you being your idol than I was.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's powerful.
And that's Butkus. You know, if you look at some of the quotes from him today, you know, and at the time, I don't know, it must have been close to 20 years ago. I hadn't met Gale yet then. And Dick was, I'd gone a couple of Bears events and Dick was there and it was just, he was so funny and, you know, and he couldn't have, he did everything to make you not feel intimidated, but you still were.
Yeah.
I mean, my God, the most intimidating guys that I've ever been around are Butkus and Nitschke, you know, both went to the same high school, the CVS. And, you know, you just.
At least Butkus had all his teeth, right? I mean, Nitschke would smile at you with no teeth.
I think Nitschke had some falsies by the time I.
Oh, he did? Okay.
I had breakfast with Nitschke once at a playoff game. And, you know, it was just, you know, great getting to interact with those guys. And then later Gale, I was blessed enough to host one of his charity events, and which he asked me to do. And, I think I told you guys the greatest piece of memorabilia. I don't have much, and I have some typical things like a ball from the World Series, and I have a ball signed by Michael Jordan, and you know, there's some stuff I have that, you know, is pretty cool, but nothing like the day they were drafted or the day they were introduced after they were drafted in 1955. I think they were chosen 3 and 4, Butkus 3, Sayers 4, and I have a photo color photo signed to me by each one of them.
Wow.
over their names, over their face, like just off their faces. Signed by Gail, signed by Dick. It's the greatest thing I have. Yeah. And you know, I was a little kid, and to think they, you know, nowadays you would only, I think the idolizing them might be diminished by, because people look at how many times they make the playoffs, how many divisions they win, how many Super Bowls they appear in. None, and none. And they were nonetheless the idols of, and Ernie Banks, none. How about that? Banks, Williams, Butkus, Thayers. Mm. No postseason appearances.
That's incredible.
And it didn't diminish any. Now, Billy Williams had one when he got to Oakland. He went to Oakland at the end, and he had it. But, and I think Ferguson Jenkins must have had one in Texas. Ron Santo, they didn't have any. And they're as beloved. You know, you guys got people calling. You got people you're talking to. I mean, I don't and Jordan and Pippen.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I knew you wouldn't let us down with the stories. Before we let you go, Michael, did the Bulls hit a home run with a Billy Donovan hire?
I don't know, but I'm glad this is the swing they took. You guys know I've been saying the player development needs to be a bigger deal. It means you got to spend a lot more money, okay? So you got to spend a lot more money to have the kind of player development the Bulls did not have, according to other teams and other executives that I listen to. They do now. And they have an emphasis. They've placed an emphasis on it by hiring Billy Donovan. Billy Donovan lost Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and kept making the playoffs. So I'm sorry, man. And I'm biased. I covered Billy Donovan. I got to know Billy when he was a student, when he was a player at Providence.
Billy the Kid,
for
right?
Patino. Yeah, and I've liked him. I've followed his career. I don't even know how long Billy played pro basketball. He played for the Knicks. It seemed he was a Knick uniform when Patino was coaching there. Maybe he played one season or part of one season, but maybe it was more than that. But then he was a great coach in Florida. And then, you know, I'm always suspect when guys go from college to the prison. You got to prove it. Well, he did. And he, you know, Billy has a way with him, with himself, of getting to players and getting them to be better. And so the question is, whether he hits a home run or not, it depends. I'm like, how good is Zach LaVine? How good is Lauri Markkanen? Can we express something other by Christmas than, oh my God, what's wrong with Lauri Markkanen? Can we have some, like, if we're, so the pieces, there. I know that Charles last night said this is a bad job. It appears to be a bad job. But, I mean, you know, great jobs don't become open all that often, with all due respect to the Indiana Pacers, who got rid of a good coach, and it's a pretty good job. They don't become open all that often. You got to step in there and improve it. And what was impressive to me is that Billy wanted this job. Billy could have waited this out. He could have gotten a better job. He didn't do that. So I'm encouraged. I like Billy Donovan a lot. I believe in what he teaches. You know, I know how much Chris Paul thinks of him, and you guys know I'm working with Chris Paul on some stuff. And so I know how much Chris Paul didn't even have to be traded. Chris Paul could have gone somewhere and played on a ready-made championship team. He didn't do that. He liked what he was doing with the guys he was doing it with, but the coach he was doing it for. So to me, all of that speaks to Donovan's credentials, his legitimacy, his authenticity, his credibility as a coach with his players. Is it a home run? I don't know. But I like the hiring of Billy Donovan. And, you know, I mean, all those guys are coming to camp, right? I mean, they're all getting ready to go in. I don't know when it's going to start. I just like that. I like that. And whether Billy Donovan's there or not, because he's got to move, he can talk to him on Zoom. I don't care. That needs to be the first change in the overrated phrase I'm going to use now, the Bulls culture. Needs to be that guys are expected to play and be better and play up to the form that got them drafted in some pretty good spots. The Bulls have players who've been drafted in pretty darn good spots. So, you know, I like the players, but they got to develop and they got to stay healthy. And so health and development have to be their two priorities to meet.
Great stuff, Michael. We appreciate you.
Yes.
Thank you so much. All the best, okay?
Thank you, Mike.
All right, you guys. I appreciate it. We'll talk soon. Yeah.
We knew there would be nobody better to tell stories than Michael Wilbon. We will play you Charles Barkley ripping the Bulls' job. That's coming up next.